This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Joy wishes to advise the following program, Hide and Seek, is a show intended for an adult audience. Generally, our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
Hide and Seek.
Sit down and enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride.
This is Dean Beck and James Findlay on Hide and Seek in our very special issue of Hide and Seek. It is Surviving Sexual Assault.
That's right, for Community Safety Month here at Joy 94.9.
And we have had a number of terrific SMSs come in. You can do so too by SMSing...
Yeah, on 0427JOY949.
Or on air at joy.org.au. And a really wonderful message that I must read out, and this is from Dan Vo here at Joy. He says, "Hi Dean, James, Greg, Gabby and Trish. Thank you to everyone on the panel for what you do to help and heal every day. I'm very inspired by what you've been talking about. You see, I was sexually abused more than 2 decades ago. I'm lucky enough to say that my life was affected, but not shattered, by what happened to me as a child. I'm empowered by the fact that my work, in whatever way, contributes to giving people a safe space for emotional self-expression and exploration, and that can lead to giving people a new lease on life. In helping others, we shall help ourselves. And right now, I feel incredibly proud because I'm part of an organisation that has had a program like ours to allow the space for such a difficult and important topic. Dan, thank you very much." We're now joined by Carolyn Worth, CEO of the Southeast Centre Against Sexual Assault, and by a very special man, Leonard, who is a survivor of sexual assault. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us here on Hide and Seek.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Carolyn, you come across sexual assault victims every day, and it's, as we discussed, it's a horrible word, but when you get them, I guess that's what they are. Until they can change it for themselves and you help them through that process, what is it that makes you get up every day and experience this over and over again? What motivates you to do this?
What motivates me? I think I probably have a serious need to actually feel useful and do a job that feels useful. And this actually for me does feel like a job that has some meaning, that, you know, makes me feel like I'm helping people. And I think for some people that's important at work.
Absolutely. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, I get that. My work calendar the other day had this comment by, I've forgotten the woman's name now, but she said, "The hours of your life are too valuable to be sold cheaply, so you don't sell them just for money." And I thought, that's really clever, that you have to do something that matters. So for me, this matters. And I also get to meet some people like Leonard, who are just really very special people, and, you know, they're willing to talk about what's happened to them. And watching people recover is just a really very good thing.
Yeah.
You know, it always makes you feel like you've achieved something.
Leonard, how old were you when you were a victim of sexual assault?
I was 3.
Right.
So the abuse that I suffered was from 3 until 10.
Oh. So that's a big chunk if you're growing up.
It is. And it's very much in very formative years as a small child. So, yes.
Do you see yourself as perhaps missing out on some of your childhood? Did you have to grow up too quick, or do you know what I mean?
It's very difficult. I can probably look back now and go, yes. At the time, you live how you have to live.
Sure.
You survive how you have to survive. So,
and you still play games and you still rode bikes. And
yes, and all of that. And not knowing any different.
Sure.
So that's the environment that I had to grow up in, or the environment that I lived in. So not knowing any difference.
Yeah, I suppose that's the hardest thing, because I thought if it's happening, so I suppose if it's happening to you at that age, you're kind of thinking, well, is this kind of happening to everyone?
Yes.
To some aspect?
I think at such a young age, when abuse happens to very small children, they don't understand that, or there isn't a thought process in their minds whether this is wrong or whether this should happen. They actually don't know. And if these things happen in those developing years, you know, it is very difficult.
Carolyn, the children often blame themselves for the abuse that they suffer. They feel that they've done something wrong. Or how do we get that out and transform that? How do we stop kids from putting themselves in the self-blame category?
I suppose the first thing you'd actually want to do is sort of have enough training in schools, enough information in schools, that kids in fact feel they can talk to someone about what's happened if something's happening that makes them feel uncomfortable. If in fact things have happened like they did to Leonard, and they then tell somebody and they think they're to blame because things have been said to them, and often things have been said to them, like someone will say, well, if you tell anyone about, say, what's been happening with Daddy and you, then of course Daddy will go to jail, or, you know, Mummy will be upset, and Mummy is upset and Daddy does go away. And well, of course they think they're to blame, because kids are quite egotistical at a certain age, you know, the world revolves around them. And you have to work with them in terms of getting them to think about that sort of behaviour was wrong. And, you talk to them about this, that was wrong, those things shouldn't happen.
We've spoken previously on this show about introducing sex education at a very early age, at 6 or 7 years of age, and in its own right form and place, so that children have an understanding of themselves and their bodies. And what is your perspective on the right form of sexual education for children from a young age?
We run a program in schools called Feeling Safe Together. In that, we sort of help kids think about what makes them feel uncomfortable, because you can get into this terrible mess about saying to them, well, you know, you should never tell lies, people should never tell you untruths, but it's not actually true. You tell children about, you know, this is a secret and we'll keep the secret. And you end up having to actually work with them about good secrets and bad secrets, because there are secrets that, you know, people sometimes keep in families. Like, you know, you've bought a special present and it's a secret, isn't it? So we're going to hide it, and then you pretend it's not there.
And it's when you have those lies and those secrets and the things you can and you can't do, it's hard for kids to actually work out which is the ones you can do and you can't do.
Yeah,
you know, it's mixed messages.
I remember this happening, like, in my childhood, that, you know, we'd go to the beach or something, but we were supposed to be going somewhere else. And then, but Mum's like, and then my little brother would say someone to something else, and she's like, oh, no, you can't tell that. That was a secret.
That's right.
It's like, well, I didn't know. So I suppose, secrets are like, you know, what is a secret that you can keep? What is something that, you know, that isn't really a secret? Or
that's right. And it's really, isn't it, about sort of good secrets and bad secrets, and secrets that are shared really with the whole family eventually.
Yeah.
And ones that are destructive. But we try and talk to children about feeling uncomfortable. When you feel uncomfortable, you just say no. But if you were very young, in fact, you almost never feel, well, comfortable, probably, because you're told this is how the world is.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
It's not. It's this other way.
I suppose there's also a shock element involved too, is there, when the child's experiencing something that they haven't necessarily, like, experienced before?
But quite often people will groom children from very, very young.
Right.
And if you've been groomed, then that's how your world is. So, you know, you're slowly inducted into all sorts of things.
Jeez.
Can some of that grooming mean that children are made or think that what they're experiencing is they're getting pleasure out of it, but you need to get the message through to them that an older person touching you in that way is wrong?
That's right.
You know, it's how do you get that through, that whilst you might kind of enjoy something, it's totally wrong. It's out of perspective, it's out of kilter, it's out of whack.
Mm. Well, I suppose that's right, although for often a lot of smaller children, they'll talk about things being yucky and they didn't always feel that comfortable about it. They liked other things that went with it sometimes.
Sometimes like the attention.
Yeah, the attention, special presence, being treated like, you know, a special child.
Yeah.
Compared to the other kids.
Being singled out as the special one.
Yeah, being singled out as the special one. I mean, those things are often quite positive things. But they'll often talk about they didn't like the yucky bits.
Yeah.
And the yucky bits are obviously the inappropriate sexual touching and activity. They're quite difficult things to work through with them. And especially if they've got to an older age before they've realised, and often some kids have, if their family's quite dysfunctional, they'll get to the age where they start to talk to other friends or they've got a boyfriend and then everything really starts to unravel because, say, their father or their stepfather's really controlling and doesn't want them to have a boyfriend.
Mm.
And then it starts to become very clear and often that's when they'll talk to somebody.
Leonard, there's a wide variety of effects that individuals suffer post sexual assault. The development of violent behaviour, the development of criminal behaviour, difficulties with sexuality and sex, inability to form lasting relationships, lack of self-confidence, marital problems,
yes.
Parental problems. As an individual who's experienced it, does any of that ring true to you?
Yes. I think an element of all those situations would had somehow come to mind, that the effects of abuse affect very much every part or can affect every facet or every part of your life to some degree.
There's got to be a point as a survivor, though,
yes,
where you stop the blame,
yes,
and you move on. Can yes. we talk about that?
Yeah, and that's what I'm very happy to talk about because
what gets you to that point though?
A lot of work. a lot of hard work, and I was able to return the shame because the shame wasn't mine.
Sure.
And to get to that point is pretty incredible.
It must be very liberating.
Yes.
To feel free of that.
Yes.
But let's go through the work process. And that's, I guess, where, Carolyn, you come in to help quite a bit with the program that you have at Southern Health. There are workshops, there's counselling. Yep. You go through a process to be free of this. What does that process look like?
I suppose the first part of the process for people is actually contacting someone and deciding they want to do something about it. Reaching out. Yeah, that's right. And then being able to sort of keep doing that, because a lot of people will make the initial contact and then it really is too difficult and they retreat again for another however long, 6 months, a year, you know, 6 years even. So we try and keep the doors open for people, saying, you know, anyone can come back at any time to, and it's, you know, see CASA, which is a program of Southern Health. So people firstly need to reach out. And then I suppose after that, as Leonard says, there's a lot of hard work. You know, you start working out which way of being helped is useful for you. And for some people it is one-on-one counselling. For other people it's being in a group with other people. And we run a weekend for men once a year. And for some people that has been really powerful and valuable. And occasionally we run groups that are much more creative, in that you can do clay work or yoga or mosaic. And for other people, that's better than talking.
Right. How is art therapeutic in surviving sexual assault? Or is it just the expression, being able to... Some people are more tactile.
It's true, some people are more tactile. For some people, talk therapy doesn't work.
Right.
It just doesn't work. It's too hard for them to express what's happened, to put it into words, either they're not particularly articulate or it doesn't suit them. And we found for people like that, there are just a number of things. The yoga groups have worked really well, but also the mosaic groups work for people because you can focus and you can be asked to do a mosaic that illustrates, you know, your feeling of grief about what you lost, and they can do that over a few weeks. And for some people that's just really liberating. And then last year we had an art display, and for a lot of people they were never going to have anything beautiful shown in public.
Sure.
And it made them feel really good about themselves and
Absolutely.
About the things they'd done. And I think that was probably worth a year's therapy for a few of the people.
Yeah, I get that. Leonard, what worked for you?
Well, I started off, I was in a, I guess many years the abuse had been hidden and I'd lived with it and I'd actually blocked it out of my memory.
So you just didn't acknowledge it?
That's correct.
Right.
Yeah, which sounds rather unusual thing to be able to do, but it is one of the things
it's a survival mechanism, I would suggest.
Yes. Yeah. And and I'd gone through life and I'd had, you know, quite a good life. However, things keeping everything inside one day exploded. And
what did that look like?
What did it look like? It was frightening. It was a really frightening experience. I really didn't know what was happening. Something was happening with my mind, my health, and it was just like something was just boiling inside. And then all of a sudden it exploded. And I admitted to myself then that I was a victim of child abuse. And then I had to go, what do I do now?
Like, your world had just crumbled away.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I actually couldn't go to work. So I had to I left my job and I thought, I don't know. I was drinking drugs.
It's amazing that whole encasing of what had happened to you as a child was there that got you through for so long.
Yes, and the coping mechanisms had broken down.
Yeah,
and okay. I think a lot of that too was that I had got to a point and I didn't even realise that my body and my mind was ready to heal.
Yeah,
and I had to go through the process. Yeah, I had to start the process so I could heal.
Leonard, we're going to take a little
sure.
break. We're joined by Leonard, a survivor of child sexual assault, and by Carolyn Worth, the CEO of the Southeast Centre Against Sexual Assault. This is a special edition of Hide and Seek, Surviving Sexual Assault on Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek.
This is Hide and Seek, a special edition. We're chatting about surviving sexual assault, and we're joined here in the studio by Carolyn Worth, CEO of the Southeast Centre Against Sexual Assault, and Leonard, who is a survivor of child sexual assault. Leonard, you have gone through the process now, and you've come out the other side, and you see yourself as a survivor. And,
yes.
And I truly believe it, because
yes.
you are. I
yes.
mean, you're not holding whatever it is that holds some people back, and some people just are victims for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
What makes you different in that regard? Or what makes them get stuck in that?
Or what made it possible for me to yeah. make the transition from a victim to a survivor? I guess there was strength there. I didn't want to live as a victim any longer. So I pushed myself to do anything possible and everything possible to recover. And then even going through that recovery process, there was certain times when I thought, I will never recover. This is my life.
Right.
And I had to keep pushing. And there were yeah. so many times where I thought, I can't get over this. I actually can't. But I kept going. I kept going through the program and I kept doing what I needed to do. And all the different processes that I went through, at the end, I became a survivor and it is possible. And that's such an important message that I want to get across to anyone listening is, you may not think that you can get over this or that you can recover, but believe me, you can recover, because I did. And
what were the support networks, Leonard, that you use? What on those really
yeah.
tough days, what is it that you did, or who did you ring, or,
yeah.
or what was it that got you through those bloody tough days?
I think it was finding the Centre Against Sexual Assault. and starting counselling there. And I was one of the people, I think Carolyn said that, you know, people ring up. I rang up and I hung up and someone would answer the phone, and eventually someone said, you know, can I help you? And I'm like, well, no, I don't know. And have you been sexually assaulted? And I'm going, no. Why would someone ask me that? And that's just the process that I had to go through to actually make that contact. And then I started the process and I started the counselling on a one-on-one basis, and that was really difficult. Imagine if you've held something inside for 35 years and or 30 years and you needed to get it out. It's not a quick process. But I went to counselling. I got involved with a discussion group through the centre, and that was probably one of the breakthrough points for me. Was I sat in a room with probably 15 men who had all been through what I'd been through, and that was a crucial point, because that was ending my isolation, because I'd lived in isolation. And just having that contact and meeting other people who'd been through what I'd been through, and breaking that cycle of isolation was such a huge thing. And I continued on. I went away for a weekend, a survivor's weekend, and that was really crucial in my recovery. And over a period of time, you know, and it was, I'm not saying it was easy and it was a run in the park, because it wasn't, but I got through it, and sometimes I thought, I just can't do this anymore. But I kept going and I kept going, and in the end, it worked.
Was there a day that you woke up and you just thought, actually, today, I'm a survivor?
It's very interesting. I think along the journey, there was different points where I would have a feeling come across me and like, wow, I think I've walked up some steps. I'm nearly at the top of the mountain. And various ways through the journey, I'd taken those few steps. And sometimes I took a couple backwards as well. But I always knew that if I kept striving, I'd have to get there in the end. And I did.
What was your main motivation to keep going?
To keep going. I wanted a good quality of life. I wanted to live a life without the shame. And I wanted to live a life where there wasn't any secrets, and where I didn't need to carry all of this inside me, because we carry all these terrible things inside for so long, and it's embedded, you know, in your mind. You must never talk about it, or if I block it off, it hasn't really happened. And I could just see as I went through the process that getting this out, getting this off my chest, getting it out of my head was going to enable me to live a free life.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's the motivation.
Is forgiveness a part of it?
That's an interesting one. Along the journey, there was different processes that you go through. So you go through a lot of emotions. There is a lot of anger.
Sure.
At various times, a lot of anger, a lot of, I can't believe that this happened, how could this happen to me, and all of those feelings. But where I am today is I don't have the anger anymore. And
anger's one of those things that when you actually acknowledge what a waste of energy it
is. Yes, yeah, yeah.
You can actually compartmentalise that wastefulness and channel it into positive aspects.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So where I am today is, and that's a wonderful thing, not to carry anger or hate or...
Hate's another one, yeah.
Yeah, or vengeance.
Yeah, revenge.
Yes, and all of that. So it's pretty wonderful to not have to carry those emotions around.
Carolyn, working with the police and people like Gabby from the Gay and Lesbian Task Force and Trish, you've been working in this industry of helping survivors of sexual assault for some 18 years, I believe.
That's right.
What's your relationship been like with the police over that period of time? Because you would have to be there almost when they're there, I guess, a lot of the time.
Well, that's true. I mean, in the past, certainly, I've been there sort of 2 hours after somebody's been raped and sure. The police have arrived as well. Look, some 18 years ago, the relationship with the police was not good. And they would come in with somebody who had recently been assaulted and we would barely talk to each other.
Right.
And it was sort of like a standoff and I was going to defend that victim, you know, to the very last stand.
Yeah, yeah.
And the police were going to do whatever it was the police did, but I had no idea what it was and I was sure it wasn't going to be good necessarily.
Right.
And you would wait for them to do something wrong.
Okay, to catch them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just did. And our relationship with them was really dreadful. It was just dreadful. And then I started to think this wasn't useful for victims, really, to have, you know, two people who are meant to be helping them at odds with each other. And I kept suggesting to the other workers that we could have afternoon tea, and they used to laugh a lot. And eventually we started to interact with them and talk about the fact that we were both trying really to do the same thing, to help somebody who'd been hurt.
Mm.
And slowly the process has changed. And from where it was when, you know, we really weren't barely talking to each other, we've got to the stage where in one of our locations we co-locate with the police. And the police are moving into a whole different process. And, I mean, they've moved into a lot of different processes, like with GLOWS and so on.
Yeah, like we've even got our own people there.
You know? Have? That's exactly right. You've got your own people there. And they've sort of moving so they do investigations and also victim support together.
And one of the focuses of the last police commissioner and, again, of this current police commissioner is the community focus and what they call community policing. I guess that's what you're very much a part of as well.
I think that's right. Certainly co-locating with the police isn't something I'd have ever thought we'd do.
18 years ago.
18 years ago, even 10 years ago. And they're not in a building that has all those blue and white squares.
Right, you know? Yes.
They're actually in a building that has a name that signifies both of us. And it doesn't look like a police building. It looks like a building in the community.
And, Leonard, I believe you and Carolyn have lectured at the police academy.
Yes, that's right. I'll go out with Carolyn. And I guess having a survivor there is very important in a way, because the police need and do deal with people coming forward often about past abuse, which is many years ago, or recent sexual assault. And I guess what I want to get across is how maybe the police can deal with someone who is in trouble or who is having trouble expressing what they need to express, sure, because they may be in a state of shock.
So, and sometimes fearful of that authority figure too.
Totally, yeah, totally. Yeah. Mm. So that's really important to have someone from this side maybe just being able to explain the different reactions that they may come across in their investigations.
Now, police refer victims, I believe, to a free counselling service for victims of crime, VOCAT.
Yes, that's right.
Can you explain what that free service is?
Well, that VOCAT is free. I mean, other than you might have to actually pay some solicitors. Oh, no, you don't have to pay solicitors because they're going to charge VOCAT for it. But this is hard to explain, actually. If you've been a victim of crime, certainly a sexual crime, you're entitled to up to $10,000 special financial assistance, recovery of earnings, recovery of certain other things that you might have lost, clothing and so forth.
And if you need time out from work.
Time out from work, that's right. They will pay lost wages and they will also pay for medications and some medical expenses. And that's basically for virtue of being a victim of crime.
Now, so this is where all sorts of cases where victims of crime have received funding, and this counselling service is also a part of that bigger picture stuff, I guess.
Well, CARS is a free counselling, so in reality you can attend a CARS, and depending on which one it is, depends how long you can attend. But at CCARS you could attend for several years if that's what you needed to do. Other services the victims of crime will fund for you, so you get 5 sessions and then another 5 sessions, so that's 10 sessions. So that would also be covered by victims of crime.
It also, it sounds a little bit sort of numerical and clinical.
It did sound a bit numerical, but it actually is numerical because at some point they have to have a way of working it out. It's not open-ended.
Who funds you at Southern Health?
Mostly the Department of Human Services, and we get some money from the Department of Justice.
Right. Okay. Okay. And you're part of a bigger network.
There were 16 CARSes in Victoria.
That's right. I saw them on your website, and I was trying to work out how all of this worked.
Oh, that is how it works. You tend to go to the one nearest to you, but you don't have to go to the one nearest to you. And sometimes there's a reason why you mightn't want to go to the one in your area.
Sure.
But they're scattered around. There's 6 in the city, including Gatehouse, which is for under 18. And there's 9 then, obviously, in rural areas. And they're in places like Wangaratta and down in Gippsland and at Horsham. And
we've been talking to Leonard, a survivor of sexual assault, and Carolyn Worth, CEO of the Southeast Centre Against Sexual Assault. This is a special edition of Hide and Seek where we're talking about surviving sexual assault. We'll be back with Carolyn and Leonard to say goodbye very shortly. This is Joy
94.9.
This is Hide and Seek's special edition surviving sexual assault. James, it's been one hell of a night.
I've pretty much been speechless the whole time. Sorry, Dean.
Your focus is pushing those buttons, and can I just say thank you for doing a darn good job on a tough night.
Thanks, Dean.
1 in 10 homes involves incest here in Australia, and family violence costs Australia about $8 billion, with a B, dollars a year, a substantial proportion of which is borne by the victims themselves. Carolyn Worth, what do we do to change society's culture in regards to family violence and sexual assault? How do we fix it?
How do we fix it? Well, I suppose the first thing you do is actually at least you talk about it so it's out in the open, because I've been in this field a long while, longer than I'd actually like to think about, but certainly since the early 70s when you didn't talk about these things.
It would never have been on radio.
Well, that's true. It wouldn't have been on radio. It wasn't anywhere, really. There was no one to talk to anyway. But also, it just wasn't the thing you did. You didn't wash your dirty linen in public. You didn't do any of those things. You kept things to yourself. So at least now you're able to, in fact, start talking about it and do those, find places to go. So instead of there being nowhere to go, there's a service of 16 CARSes. There are a lot of family violence agencies who are helping people leave difficult situations. Back in the early 70s, my memory is of, a group of volunteers who would take women home if they'd been raped after they'd been to the Russell Street police station, because there was no other way to help them. So people would use their spare bedrooms and so on. So things have changed. You can talk out about it. We've broken the silence. And then I suppose you have to put other things in place to actually change much wider views about what's acceptable.
Leonard, how long ago was it that you sought help?
Nearly 4 years ago.
Okay. How did you find that experience? I mean, other than the horror of it all, but
yes.
How did you find the network of assistance, I guess, is the question.
Once I found CASA and the resources that are available, the resources are there, and they're the resources that I needed, that people need. So the resources are there. If you can come forward and use them, they're the tools that I needed and other people needed or need to go through the process.
And I guess that's the fortunate position that we're in today rather than the 70s, is that not only are we talking about it, but we do have some of those resources and facilities available to us. We do have a more open, listening and understanding police force, and we've got great people like the two of you. Thank you for the wonderful work you do, because you're there picking up the pieces each and every time. It's I take my hat off to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Carolyn Worth, CEO from the South East Centre Against Sexual Assault. And Leonard, thank you very much for sharing your story and your survival.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I'm always happy to come along and to have a chat about my experience. If it can help somebody else, that's what it's about. Please tell somebody. Once you've told somebody, half that weight is taken off your shoulders. The resources are there. Tell somebody, whether it be a friend, just tell somebody.
And the crisis line for the Southeastern Centre Against Sexual Assault is 9594-2289. That's 9594-2289. Carolyn Worth and Leonard, thank you very much. I'd also like to thank both Sergeant Scott Davis and Acting Sergeant Gabrielle Tyack from the Victorian Police Gay and Lesbian Liaison Office. I'd like to thank Greg Atkins, Executive Director of the Anti-Violence Project of Victoria. And we'd also like to thank Senior Sergeant Trish Duke, Victorian Police Sexual Offences and Child Abuse Unit. James Finlay, thank you.
Thank you, Team Beck. It's been a tough show.
It's been quite a show. And I'd also like to send out a very special thanks to Fiona Patton from the Australian Sex Party for her message of support. Thank you, Dan, for your wonderful message. And
thank you, listeners.
Thank you for listening. Messages. And Robert Briley on the front desk, thank you for your ongoing support as well. I'm Dean Beck.
And I'm James Finlay.
And this has been a very special edition of Hide and Seek, Surviving Sexual Assault on Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek.
Sponsored by Circuit Bar. Circuit.com.au.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.